Rabbi Daniel Roeselaar of Kehilat HaLeit Zion in Hendon, and I'm delighted to be kicking off the United Synagogue's Lunch and Learn programme for the week leading up to Shavuot. I've given many Lunch and Learn shiurim over the course of the past 10 years or so, and every single one I think has either been in an office or in a shul classroom or Beit Midrash. This is the first time I'm giving it out in the garden, but the weather is absolutely splendid, and I think we all hope that it'll stay like this for Yom Tov as well, because if it's like this on Shavuot, then we'll miss being in shul, but at least we'll have the blessing of lovely weather. This is Lunch and Learn. I'm sorry I can't pass the sandwiches round. It's kind of bring your own as far as that's concerned. But if you provide the lunch, I will provide the learn. Shavuot is, of course, the festival of Zman Matan Torateinu, the time when the Torah was given to the Jewish people, when we're celebrating receiving the Torah at Har Sinai. Receiving the Torah at Har Sinai is something which happened historically 3,300 years ago, but it's also something that happens regularly in our lives, because we reenact Kabbalat HaTorah. We reenact the acceptance and the receiving of the Torah whenever we read from the Torah on Shabbat or during the week, and whenever we listen to the reading of the Torah. The Torah that we received at Sinai 3,300 years ago wasn't simply a historical relic that is put aside and we remember once a year, but it's something that we study daily and we read from frequently and regularly. And what I want to do in the next 45 minutes is study some of the laws and details which pertain to the mitzvah of reading the Torah. The way I want to do it is I want to use the comments or the rulings of the Rambam, of Maimonides, in the Mishneh Torah, that's in Hilchot Tefillah, the 12th chapter of Hilchot Tefillah, of the Laws of Tefillah. And I have a Daf Makarot, a source sheet, which is available for people if they want to follow along. This you can find at www.theus.org.uk/lunch-and-learn. That's www.theus.org.uk/lunch-and-learn. Or if you have a Rambam to hand, then you're looking in Hilchot Tefillah, that which is in Sefer Ahava, and we're looking at the 12th Perek. So let's begin from the first halakha. And what I want to do is to discuss some of the background relating to each halakha as the Rambam formulates it. So the Rambam tells us, Moshe Rabbeinu tikein sheyu korim batorah barabim. It was Moshe Rabbeinu, this goes back to the time of Sinai, that it was Moshe Rabbeinu who instituted the concept that there would be a public reading of the Torah, Bashabbat uvesheini uvachamishi b'shachrit, on Shabbat mornings, on Monday mornings, and on Thursday mornings. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu institute that there should be Torah reading at such regular intervals? Kedei shelo yishu shlosha yamim b'lo shmiat haTorah. So that the Jewish people wouldn't go 3 days without hearing the Torah. The Chumash in Parashat B'Shalach tells us about the Bnei Yisrael after they crossed the Red Sea, that they went 3 days and they didn't have any water. And Chazal explained to us, the sages explained, this doesn't just mean that they didn't have any drinking water, but it also means they weren't sustained by the water of Torah. So we have a takana, the original institution of Kriyat HaTorah, was from Moshe Rabbeinu, that the Torah should be read 3 times a week, once on Shabbat morning, once on Monday morning, and once on Thursday morning. There is an interesting machloket, an interesting debate amongst the halachic authorities as to what exactly the nature is of this obligation of reading the Torah. Is this, the Rambam says, it's sheyu korim batorah barabim, that the Torah should be read publicly. So does this mean that there's only an obligation to read the Torah if there's a congregation present, but that no private individual has an objective obligation to listen to the Kriyat HaTorah? Or does it mean that in actual fact, every individual has got an obligation to listen to the Kriyat HaTorah, But the way that it's fulfilled is by reading it in a public context. A nafkamina, practical implication between these two positions, is a person who, for whatever reason, isn't able to go to shul, say, on a Monday morning. They show up Monday afternoon for mincha. They missed the laning. That's, do they need to make it up? There was laning in shul that Monday morning. The tzibur, the congregation, heard the laning. They missed it. So, according to one opinion, it's only an obligation on the community. The community read from the Torah. According to the other opinion, no, it's an obligation on every individual, which must be fulfilled in the context of a communal reading. A further question comes up is, indeed, what if the congregation didn't read the Torah in the morning? That's for whatever reason. It could happen that the tzibur came to shul on a Monday morning and the person who has the key to the Aron HaKodesh wasn't there that day. And nobody could open the Aron HaKodesh to take out the Sefer Torah, so they weren't going to be able to lay. That's by mincha time, the person with the key has shown up and they're able to lay. That's, do you lane in the afternoon, or was this only a takana, was this only instituted for reading the Torah in the morning? The Mishnah Brura, in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch, says that b'di'avad, if necessary, one can read the laning the whole day long. There's a very interesting responsum of Rebbe, the author of Melamed Lahoel, that's who was one of the Rav David Zvi Hoffman, who was one of the German poskim at the end of the 19th century, and he discusses arrangements that they had in Berlin. Now, it seems that at the end of the 19th century, lots of the Jewish children would be going to what they called the gymnasium, the non-Jewish schools. And even if they were from homes, they still had to go to shul on Shabbat, to school on Shabbat, and they weren't able to come to shul on Shabbat morning. And Rav Asriel Hildesheimer, that's one of the preceding generation's foremost German poskim, had instituted a model where Shabbat afternoon, these boys would come after school, they'd come to shul, and they would have the Kriyat HaTorah from the morning in the afternoon, Davon Musaf, and then they daven mincha. And Rav David Zvi Hoffman discusses whether or not that was good practice or bad practice to do it that way. He notes that if you can't lane in the morning, then you can lane in the afternoon. But he's unsure as to whether or not, on an ongoing basis, this is a good practice to institute or not. So we have a number of thoughts there that's on these opening lines of the Rambam. The Rambam then goes on to tell us that Ezra HaSofer, Ezra the scribe, the prophet Ezra, tikein sheyu korin kein b'mincha b'chol Shabbat. So the notion of laning at mincha time on Shabbat afternoon was instituted several hundred years later by Ezra the Sofer, Mishum Yoshvei Kranot, because of the Yoshvei Kranot. The Yoshvei Kranot seems to be, according to Rashi's commentary in the Gemara, seems to be the shop owners, people who were busy all week long, couldn't get to shul during the week to hear the laning, so at least they should hear an extra laning that's on Shabbat afternoon to compensate for the lanings that they were going to be missing out during the week. V'gam hu tikein sheyu ha-korim b'sheni v'chamishi shloshah b'nei adam. And Ezra also formulated the format of Kriyat HaTorah. Moshe Rabbeinu simply instituted that there should be Kriyat HaTorah, but he didn't say specifically how it should be carried out. And it was Ezra HaSofer, several hundred years later, who formalized the way that it should be carried out. Every time there's laning, at least three people should be called to the Torah. And we'll discuss a little bit more about that in a few minutes' time. And that you never read less than 10 psukim. You always have to read at least 10 verses from the Torah when we read the Torah. One of the reasons is that it corresponds to the Ten Commandments, also that it corresponds to the 10 utterances with which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. There is one exception when we read less than 10 psukim from the Torah, and that's in the laning of Purim morning. Purim morning We read about Amalek's battle against Bnei Israel when they were in the wilderness. And that passage at the end of Parashat B'Shalach is only 9 verses long. That's the Mechaber, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Karo, says. In actual fact, what one's supposed to do is to repeat the 9th verse. So read it a second time so that one reads a total of 10 psukim. But the Rama, Rav Moshe Isserles, codifies Ashkenazi practice that we only read the 9 psukim, because there's still been read 3 psukim, 3 verses for each person who's been called up, and the total theme has been completed in those 9 verses. So that's some considerations there in our first halacha in the Rambam. Let's move on now to halacha bet, the second halacha in the Rambam. The Rambam writes as follows: For elu hein hayamim shekorim bahem batorah b'tzibur. These are the times when we read the Torah publicly, b'Shabbatot, so we read it every Shabbat, and the Rambam goes on to explain how it's divided into 54 sidrot or parashiot, so that it can be read every year. That's the entirety of the Torah, even though in antiquity, in Eretz Yisrael, the practice was to spread out the reading of the Torah over 3 years. The practice in Bavel, and nowadays the universal practice, is to read the entire Torah in the course of 1 year. Over Moadim, and on the Chagim, the festivals, we read the Torah. Over Rashei Chodashim, on Rosh Chodesh, we read from the Torah. Over Taniot, on fast days, we read from the Torah. Over Chanukah Ufurim, Chanukah and Purim, even though those are post-Torah festivals, nevertheless, we read from the Torah on those occasions. And every Monday and Thursday. And indeed, the Mishneh Masechet Megillah tells us that all the Yom Tov lanings were instituted by Moshe Rabbeinu. Vaydaber Moshe et Moadei Adonai el Bnei Yisrael. Moshe spoke about the festivals of Hashem to Bnei Yisrael, meaning Sheyu Korin Otan, that's that you should read them, that's in their correct times, meaning we should read about Pesach on Pesach, we should read about Shavuot on Shavuot, we should read about Sukkot on Sukkot. Then the Rambam adds in, "Va'ein maftirin benavi, ela b'shabbatot uviyamim tovim." We only have a haftarah from the prophets on Shabbat and Yom Tov, uvi Yom HaKippurim and on Yom Kippur, uvi Tisha B'av and on Tisha B'av. So this is an interesting observation in the Rambam about the haftarot, because of course he's missing out a haftarah on Tanit Tzibur in the afternoon. On a public fast day, our practice is that we read a haftarah, that's from the book of Isaiah, in the afternoon. We don't read one in the morning, but in the afternoon, part of the characteristic of a public fast day is that we listen to admonitions from the prophets. We listen to what the prophets have to tell us and advise us about how we should live our lives, in addition to the Torah reading as well. That's as far as the Torah reading on a Tanit Tzibur, on a public fast day, is concerned. There is interesting discussion amongst the poskim, amongst the halakhic authorities, about how many people in the congregation need to be fasting. That's ideally a community will have everybody in shul will be fasting on a public fast day. In reality, that's not always the case, and the question comes up: can one still have the Kriyat HaTorah? So the Mishnah Berurah says that you need at least 7 people who are going to be fasting, but the Aruch HaShulchan, another commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, disagrees, and he says, no, a characteristic of the fast days is that there's Kriyat HaTorah, just as you say the Amidah every day, one of these dates in the calendar you also lay, and therefore, so long as some people, Miktzat Mitanin, there are a few people in Shul who are fasting, that is sufficient. There's a famous Teshuvah, famous responsum of Rabbi Akiva Eger, one of the great 18th century halakhic authorities, who was asked the following question. There was a person who was very, very ill, certain rabbi who was ill, and he had to eat on Yom Kippur. And they were making up a minyan for him in his home on Yom Kippur. And they wondered if they would be able to call him up from the midst of Mafti Yona on Yom Kippur afternoon. That's the, presumably he usually got the Haftarah of Mafti Yona on Yom Kippur, and they wanted it to be no different for him this year. The question was, because he wasn't fasting, could he be called up to that Torah reading? So Rabbi Akiva Eiger says there's no question about the morning. The morning, even though he wasn't fasting, he could be called up to the laning, because the laning on Yom Kippur morning is a function of Kedushat Hayom. It's a function of the sanctity of the day. The fact that today is Yom Kippur is like today is Shabbat, or today is Shavuot, or today is Sukkot. It's a day when there's supposed to be Kriyat HaTorah. The question is about Yom Kippur afternoon. Is Yom Kippur, the laning on Yom Kippur afternoon, a function of the sanctity of the day? Or is it a function of the fact that Yom Kippur is a fast day? And just as on Tisha B'Av and on Asara B'Tevet and on the 17th of Tammuz, etc., etc., we have laning on in the afternoon, so also on Yom Kippur we would also have laning in the afternoon. His conclusion seems to be that this is actually a function of the Kedushat Hayom, and therefore this rabbi could be called up to that laning. Let's skip a few halachot and move on now to halacha vav in the Rambam. Halacha number 6 in this chapter in the Rambam. So the Rambam says as follows. Ein hakorei batorah rashai likrot batorah ad sheyichle amein mipi hatzibur. Interesting starting point for the laning, and this is a perhaps just a piece of advice for Balei Kriya, people who do the laning in shul, that you're not supposed to start laning till the tzib, or till the congregation, have finished responding amen to the bracha of the person who was called up. And that obviously is so that everybody in shul can hear the laning clearly. Then the Rambam tells us another important halacha. Karavata, if the person reading read but misread a word, he erred. Afila b'dikduk otachat, even mispronouncing a word. It wasn't that he, instead of saying Vaidaber Moshe, he said Vaidaber Hashem or Vaidaber Avraham. But he just mispronounced the word. Instead of saying Vaidaber, he said V'diber or something like that. Machazirin oto, we make him go back. Adshi kra'ena b'dikduk, until he reads it correctly. Now, this is a challenge that often comes up in shuls, that the person laning, for whatever reason, makes a mistake. That when you're reading from the Sefer Torah, there are no vowels, there's no notations in the Sefer Torah. Even an experienced Baal Kriya, a person with many years of experience laning, can sometimes make a mistake and misread a word. So many shuls, everybody likes to shout out and catch him out and put him under lots of pressure. So is this the best practice? Is it correct practice? So the Rambam says he has to go back and repeat the word correctly. The Rambam doesn't say you have to shout at him and it has to be a game in the community, how many people can catch him out. Interestingly, the Tur, another important halachic work from the medieval time, the predecessor, if you like, of the Shulchan Aruch, brings two opinions. He brings the opinion of the Rambam, but he also brings another opinion that says, no, just for a reading mistake, certainly a minor reading mistake, you don't need to go back and correct it. Obviously, if you say that Tirtzach instead of Lo Tirtzach, you shall murder instead of you shall not murder, that would need correcting, presumably. If a person said Vayedaber Hashem instead of Vayedaber Moshe, saying that Hashem spoke instead of Moshe spoke, that would also be a serious mistake. But a smaller mistake doesn't need correcting. That, and I think the reason for this leniency is because even when people speak in whatever language it is, whether they're speaking in Hebrew or they're speaking in the vernacular, however they're speaking, a person sometimes mispronounces a word, but the import and the intention is still clear. That a person might talk about, you know, putting something on the table or the chair, and instead of pronouncing chair, you know, correctly, they might say on the chair, that's a chair or whatever it is. It's clear they're talking about putting it on the chair rather than putting it on something else. And so the same could be true with the Kriyat HaTorah. However, the Mishnah Berurah rules, like the Rambam, that the Shulchan Aruch rules that if the meaning is changed in any way, whether it's from past to present or future to past or something like that, then you certainly have to go back and correct the mistake. But one doesn't need to correct a mistake if it's just with the neginot, if it's just with the trop, the tune for the laning. If the tune for the laning is mistaken, then one doesn't need to correct it. However, Rav Soloveitchik was very fond of repeating in the name of his grandfather, Reb Chaim Brisker. The Reb Chaim Brisker maintained that even if you made a mistake in the trop, in the tune for the laning, you also had to go back and repeat it. And that was because the Gemara tells us that even the Masorah, even the traditions for the notes under the letters, that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai, and therefore that's the proper way of reading from the Torah. The Rambam then goes on to tell us, for lo yikru shnayim batorah el ha'echad levado, that you don't have two people reading in unison when we read the Torah, but rather just one person should read from the Torah and everybody else should listen. That the Shulchan Aruch points out that actually nowadays the practice has changed a little bit from what it was in Talmudic and Mishnaic times. The original practice was that whoever was called up to the Torah would read his own passage from the Torah. Nowadays, not everybody's able to do that. And nowadays, the Baal Kriya, the person appointed to do the laning, reads the laning on behalf of everybody who's called up. However, the Shulchan Aruch says that nonetheless, the person who's called up should still read along with the Baal Kriya in an undertone. Why is that? So that their bracha that they said before the laning shouldn't be regarded as a bracha levatala, shouldn't be regarded as a blessing in vain. This person has come up to the Torah, he said a bracha on reading from the Torah, and then he hasn't read from the Torah. Somebody else has read from the Torah on his behalf, and that would be a problem of a bracha levatala. That's saying a bracha in vain, a bracha on reading the Torah, and he hasn't read from the Torah. That's Rav Soloveitchik understands there are other reasons why the person needs to read along, and that it's not a problem of bracha levatala. He suggested that the reason why the ole, the person called up to the reading of the Torah, needs to read along with the person doing the laning, is because the role of the ole, the role of the person called the Torah, is not simply to listen to the reading of the Torah or to read along with the person reading the Torah, but is actually he's teaching Torah publicly. He is communicating Torah. He's giving a lesson in Torah to the people who are in shul, and that you can't appoint somebody to do on your behalf. If it's just reading, somebody else can read on my behalf. But when it comes to the act of teaching, I can't get somebody to teach on my behalf. If I'm called to the Torah, I have to teach myself, and therefore I have to read along that somewhat audibly, according to Rav Soloveitchik, with the person who's actually doing the laning. Then the Rambam continues to tell us, karav nishtateik, that if the person reading from the Torah had a fit in the middle or collapsed or whatever it was and wasn't able to continue the laning, yamod acher tachtav, that somebody else takes over, v'yatkim makom shitchil harishon shenishtateik, that and carries on from where the person that who wasn't able to carry on, that from where that person started, umavarech basof, doesn't say an opening bracha, but says a bracha at the end. There's an interesting halachic discussion with regard to the requirement to read along with the person who's appointed to do the laning. This is a discussion which actually has practical implications in our current situation, not yet in this country, but certainly in Eretz Israel and in other places in the world. The Shulchan Aruch discusses whether or not a blind person who's unable to read and unable to see the text in the Torah, are they allowed to be called up to the laning? And the Shulchan Aruch comes to the conclusion that they can be called up to the laning. Sorry, the Shulchan Aruch comes to the conclusion that they can't be called up to the laning. Why can't they be called up to the laning? Because the mitzvah of being called up is that you have to see the text in front of you and be able to read along with the koreh, with the person who's doing the laning. And a blind person obviously can't do that. The Rama, Rav Moshe Isserles, disagrees with that ruling. And he says that it's, you know, unfair on a person that, you know, they should always be disqualified from receiving the Aliyah LaTorah. And because of Kavod HaBriot, because of human dignity towards them, so we'll call them up for the reading of the Torah, even though they're unable to read along, and we rely on lenient opinions. So the Rama is of the opinion that even if the Ola, even if the person called up, is unable to read along, he's allowed, still allowed to be called up. Now, a question that came up a few weeks ago that in Israel was to do with outdoor minyanim under social distancing rules. That social distancing, as we all know, means that you can't have two people standing alongside each other. That, so there was a question that outdoor minyanim were allowed, initially of 10 people, and then subsequently of 19 people, and now even more people, and you're allowed to have minyanim now in Israel in shuls. We're not up to that yet, but, you know, we will be. The question comes up with the Kriyat HaTorah, with the laning. You've got the Baal Kriya who's reading along that, and what are we going to do about the person who's called up? On the one hand, he needs to be able to see the text that the Baal Kriya is reading from, and he needs to be able to read that text. On the other hand, social distancing means that he can't stand alongside the person who's reading from the Torah. So what should one do? So a very innovative and practical solution that I've seen to this is simply to erect a perspex screen at the Bima, and the Baal Kriya stands on one side, and the Ole, the person called up, stands on the other side. And it's just like in a shop or in a bank where you've got a screen separating them, and therefore they're not close to each other, and therefore they are socially distancing. So that's one way of dealing with it. What if you haven't got such a screen available? That's what should one do? So there seems to be a machloket, a dispute amongst the contemporary poskim about what the best practice is. Some authorities are saying that we see from the Rama that one can say the bracha even if one can't see the text of the Sefer Torah. So therefore, under these circumstances, a person can stand at a distance of 2 meters away from the Sefer Torah, 2 meters away from the person who's laning, say the bracha, and even though they can't see the Torah, the person who's laning will read on their behalf. That's the suggestion of some poskim. Other poskim, including Rav Osher Weiss, one of the foremost poskim that's dealing with coronavirus issues from a halachic perspective in Israel today, he's of the opinion that's only good on a one-off basis. As if you've got a blind person in shul, you can from time to time call that person up so they don't feel excluded from the Kriyat HaTorah, but this is not a workable solution on a permanent or ongoing basis. And his recommendation actually is that in this case, the Baal Kriya, the person who's called to the laning, should say the brachot 7 times on a Shabbat morning or 3 times on a weekday morning, and gets called up time and time and time again for each of the aliyot. Let's move on now in the Rambam to Halacha Tet Zayin, Halacha 16, and we'll see further interesting observations about the Kriyat HaTorah. So the Rambam says, Kama hein hakorim. How many people do we call up to the Torah? B'Shabbat b'Shacharit korin shiva. On a Shabbat morning, we call up 7 people. B'Yom HaKippurim shisha. On Yom Kippur, we call up 6. B'Yamim tovim chamisha. And on a Yom Tov, we call up 5. Ein pochatin mehen, aval mosifin alehen. We don't never call up less than the statutory number. So on Shabbat, you never call up less than 7. On Yom Kippur, you never call up less than 6. On Yom Tov, you never call up less than 5. Aval Mosifin Alehen, but you can add to them. On a Shabbat, you can call up as many people as you like. Yom Kippur, on a festival, you can call up as many people as you like. That's the view of the Rambam. That's the Ran, in his commentary to Masechet Megillah, as one of the medieval Spanish authorities, suggests that in actual fact it might be that only on Shabbat we're allowed to call up as many people as we like. On Yom Tov we have to call up specifically 5, and on Yom Kippur we have to call up specifically 7. Why should that be the case? Should be the case because we want to show the relative sanctity of these days. If you could call up 10 people on all of those days, it wouldn't be clear that Shabbat has more sanctity than Yom Kippur, and that Yom Kippur has more sanctity than a regular Yom Tov. So the Rambam has ruled that even on Yom Tov or Yom Kippur, you can call up many people. Ashkenazi practice is generally not to follow that ruling of the Rambam. As I say, generally, because there's an exception to the rule. The exception to the rule is on Simchat Torah. On Simchat Torah, where we follow the ruling of the Rambam, because we want to enable all the men in shul to receive an Aliyah La Torah, so therefore we'll call up additional people. But in general, on a Yom Tov, we don't do so. Though interestingly, the Mishnah Berurah discusses about on the Yamim Noraim, the high holy days, whether or not you can call up extra people. He says, ideally not, but then he makes the observation that in some shuls, the donations to the communal coffers and to the charity funds that are usually in proportion to the number of people called up. People who get called up make generous donations, and therefore in order to boost the communal coffers, not just so that there can be ice cream for every kiddush, but so that the shul can function and so that the tzedakah that needs to be given out can be given out. So if it's necessary to call up more people, then he says it's permissible to do so. Then the Rambam continues. Barashei Chodashim v'Chol HaShel Moed Korim Arba'ah. On Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed, we call up 4 people. It's not a proper Yom Tov, but it's not a weekday. So we don't call up as many as a Yom Tov. We don't call up as few as we do on a weekday. The Shabbat of Yom HaKippurim b'mincha, on Shabbat and Yom Kippur afternoon, over Sheni v'Chamishi Shel Kol HaShana, and on regular Monday and Thursdays, over Chanukah v'Purim, and on Chanukah and Purim b'Shachrit, over Mehatanit b'Shachrit over Mincha, and on fast days, Korin Shlosha, we call up 3 people. Ein pochatin minyan zeh, we never call up less than this number. V'ein mosifin alehen, and we never call up more either. On a weekday morning, we never call up more than 3, unless it's Rosh Chodesh or Chol HaMoed. But on a regular weekday morning, we never call up more than 3 people. Why is that? So in part, of course, it will be to do with the notion of progressive kedusha, progressive sanctity, that a weekday leining has less sanctity than a Chol HaMoed leining, which has less sanctity than a Yom Tov leining, which has less sanctity than a Yom Kippur leining, which has less sanctity than a Shabbat leining. But another reason is given as well, and that is tircha de tzibura. That is because it's disruptive for the congregation. That's on a Monday and Thursday mornings, that people are in a hurry to get away, that they've got to get off to work. And if you're going to call up 5, 6, 7 people, that's because this one's got a birthday and that one's got a new job and the other one's got a new car, etc., etc. So then you've got serious challenges with retaining your minyan, and therefore you only call up 3 people. So the interesting question comes up, what if there are 2 chatanim, 2 people who've just got married that day, or getting married that day, who ought to be called up? 2 people who've got a yahrzeit, 2 bar mitzvah boys, that's something like that. Can you call up an extra person in that circumstance? So the Rama, Rav Moshe Isserles, actually says that you can call up an extra person. You've got 2 chatanim, 2 bridegrooms in shul. You can call them both up and you can call up a 4th person. Why is that? Because for them it's a Yom Tov. The day on which a person gets married, it's a Yom Tov for them. On Yom Tov, you call up more people. There's no concern of that tircha de tzibura or bitul melacha. There's no concern that he has to get off to work. He's not going to work that day. And therefore you can call up an extra person. The Acharonim, the later commentaries, disagree with the Rama's ruling here. They say it doesn't make any sense to say that just because it's his Yom Tov, it's not everybody else's Yom Tov, he might have all day to sit around in shul that, after davening, that, but they've got to get off to work. So even though there's no there's no tircha, there's no inconvenience for him, there's inconvenience for them, and therefore one shouldn't call up extra people on a weekday laning under any circumstances. Interesting, the Aruch HaShulchan says that in cases of great need, where there's going to be a big broigus in shul, if you don't call up the extra person, so then you can be lenient. That's if you've got, I don't know, two people celebrating their 100th birthday, and they've both made an enormous effort to come to shul that day, and their whole family has come, and you called up a kohen and you called up a levi, and now both of them, aged 100, want to be called up, and there's obviously no option of giving one of them hagba. That's so in that case you could call up four people to stop a broigus. That's the way communities work is no doubt if one did that to stop a broigus, one would probably create another broigus, because there'd be plenty of people who say that that's not the way we do it, it's not the way we've ever done it, and that we shouldn't have done it, and I'm in a hurry to get off to work. But of course there should always be Noam, and everybody should be working together to try and reach a harmonious solution to the challenge. In actual fact, with regard to the laning on Shabbat, even though that's the Shulchan Aruch says, like the Rambam, that we can add to the people who are called up, nevertheless, that's the Acharonim want to put some sort of a cap on it. The Magen Avraham quotes the Rashbat, who says that in actual fact, it's better not to call up extra people. In Talmudic times, it was fine to call up extra people because the people who were called up didn't actually say a bracha on their own laning, at least in Mishneh times. In Talmudic times already they did, but in Mishneic times, the individuals called up just read from the Torah, and apart from the first person called up at the beginning and the last person called up at the end, no brachot were said. But he says nowadays when every person is called up, they say a bracha, there's perhaps a concern of an unnecessary bracha, and therefore if possible to stick to seven aliyot would be best practice. The Mishneh Berurah also says that we've got a concern of of people getting restless and tired of, you know, they've come to shul, they want to hear the laning, and then they want to be able to go home afterwards. They don't want to have 15 or 20 people called up for the Kriyat HaTorah. And therefore, one should try and keep it compact. But again, he says that if it's going to call Tar'omet, if it's going to cause a row in shul, so in that case, one can call up as many people as necessary. But again, as I mentioned, that rows work both ways. And if you call up extra people to incorporate more people, so then somebody else is going to get upset that it wasn't kept down to seven. But perhaps if you've got a private minyan for family simcha or something like that, and everybody wants to be called up, and everybody's happy with everybody being called up, so then that would be permissible. Let's go now to the final halacha, which I want us to look at today, and that's halacha yudchet. Halacha yudchet, number 18, tells us, b'chol kriyat kriyat me'elu. So whenever we read from the Torah, kohen korei rishon, the first aliyah goes to a kohen, kohen is called up first, v'acharav levi, and then a levi is called up, v'acharav mi'israel, and then afterwards Yisrael is called up. Minhag pashut hayom, and the universal minhag nowadays is shafilu kohen am haaretz kodem likrot lifnei chacham gadol Yisrael. That even if there's a very distinguished Torah scholar in shul, nevertheless, we'll always call up a kohen first, even if the kohen is an ignoramus. So there seems to be, or there is a debate as to under what circumstances do we give the kohen the first aliyah. That's the Gemara in Masechet Gittin tells us that it's to do with the mitzvah of the Kiddush Tor, the mitzvah that we have to sanctify the kohen, and one of the ways that we sanctify a kohen is by letting letting him have precedence in terms of Dvarim Shebiktusha, in terms of matters of holiness, and therefore reading the Torah is a matter of holiness, and the Kohen can have gets precedence there. And also because of that Darkei Shalom, we don't want there to be a row in Shul as to who should get to the first Aliyah. I'm more important than you, he's more important than you, this one, etc., etc. So we keep it that the Kohen gets the first Aliyah. However, there's a question, what if there's a distinguished Talmid Chacham there? So some authorities say, no, a distinguished Talmid Chacham will take precedence over an unlearned Kohen. But the Rambam's saying, and this is indeed the way that we practice it, is that in actual fact, we always call up a Kohen first. The Mishnah Berurah makes the observation that if you've got a learned Kohen in Shul, then it would be best to call him up first. That's not always possible. Question sometimes comes up on a weekday minyan is by the time you've called up the Kohen and the Levi, if you've got lots of Yahrzeits in Shul and they all want to receive Aliyah La Torah, you've only got one space on a Monday and Thursday because you can only call up three people. So can the Kohen forego his Aliyah, in which case he doesn't come first? If the Kohen didn't come first, the Levi doesn't come second, and therefore you can call up three Yisraelim for the laning. There are different opinions in the poskim about this. The Gemara in Masechet Gittin seems to indicate that on Mondays and Thursdays it's not a problem because there aren't so many people in shul. So getting a big crowd on Mondays and Thursdays being problematic is a challenge that goes back to Talmudic times. It's not just nowadays that less people go to shul weekdays. That's, the Tosafot says that, well, nowadays lots of people come to shul Mondays and Thursdays as well. Rav Moshe Feinstein, writing again another 700 or 800 years later, that says, no, in actual fact, we're back to a situation where Mondays and Thursdays there aren't so many people in shul. That Rav Moshe Feinstein is of the opinion that if necessary, one can be lenient and that the Kohanim can forgo their aliyah. That the Chatam Sofer seems to indicate the same thing. That the Mishnah Berurah says that one shouldn't do that, and a Kohen should always be called up first. And of course there are lots of different practices, and different rabbis and different shuls have different traditions as far as this is concerned. Both traditions, or all traditions here, are valid. It's coming from different halachic backgrounds and different perspectives, and if they do it in one shul doesn't necessarily mean that's correct or incorrect in another shul. That's the necessary disclaimer, of course. That's Rav Soloveitchik also made the observation that it's necessary to call up a Kohen first, because he said the Kohen is called up first, followed by the Levi, followed by the Israel, not just as a function of the mitzvah of the Kiddush Tor, not just because there's a mitzvah to sanctify the Kohen by giving him precedence, but also to emphasize the fact that the Torah was given to all sectors of the Jewish people, and therefore we call up a Kohen, we call up a Levi, we call up a Israel to represent all three parts of the Jewish people, and to say that everybody's got a responsibility to and a link with Torah. I want to finish with a thought about the Kriyat HaTorah in general, but with specific reference to Shavuot, which is just coming up round the corner. And that is Rav Soloveitchik's observation that Kriyat HaTorah in general, and particularly on Shavuot, is a reenactment of Ma'amad Har Sinai. It's a reenactment of the Sinaitic experience. Rav Soloveitchik says that's specifically why that's when we read from the Torah, we call up Kohen Levi Yisrael, because everybody was there at the foot of Mount Sinai. That's the reason why the person reading the Torah and the Oleh, the person called to the Torah, has to be standing up, not just because it's an important mitzvah, but because just as the people stood at the foot of Har Sinai to receive the Torah 3,300 years ago, so likewise we stand when we read the Torah nowadays to reenact that experience. And similarly, we have three people around the Bimah when we read from the Torah, one to represent the Almighty giving the Torah, one to represent Moshe Rabbeinu transmitting the Torah, and one to represent Am Yisrael receiving the Torah. And all these things are reenactments of Ma'amad Har Sinai, of the experiences receiving the Torah on Mount Sinai on that momentous occasion. That some of these we don't necessarily fulfill the entire year round. That's but certainly on Shavuot, when it comes to the receiving or the reading of the Aseret HaDibrot of the Ten Commandments, we do all stand up. That's to not just listen to the Ten Commandments, but to feel like we're reenacting what happened at Mount Sinai, that we're standing at the foot of the mountain and receiving the Torah again from Hashem. That's, I hope that everybody has a very enjoyable and spiritually uplifting Shavuot. It's a pleasure to be presenting for the United Synagogue today. That's tomorrow you'll be joined by Rabbi Harvey Belovsky of Dunson Road Synagogue in Golders Green. And also tonight on the same challenge, there's the Rabbi Steady Cook at 7 p.m. Have a wonderful day and enjoy the good weather. Thank you for joining me.